What's up, guys, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Luix FM. Today's episode features a person, if you surf, you might have heard a thing or two about. He's a man of many things. He's an author, a public speaker, a filmmaker, a surfer, and he happens to be one of the most popular surf coaches online. He's also a Luix product, but more on that a little bit later. First, I want to encourage you, if you haven't already, of course, to hop online and Google Cale Broad. Check out his YouTube channel or Instagram page where he posts epic nuggets to make you surf better, longer, and more fluid. Also, the guy lives in a van, literally pulling up to waves all around Australia to surf his brains out. But let's dive right in to see what Cale has been up to and what that mysterious Luix product is all about.
Yeah, just a hoodie up, no worries. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, mate. That's an understatement. I've had a very busy few months and then sort of coming to the end of it, which is nice, and just finally seeing like a little bit of space throughout the day to just chill at the beach and surf and actually come in and not rush off to do work and stuff. It's been quite good. Yes.
Yeah. Like the last couple of times when we talked, like you were either going to do something or you were coming from coaching or coming from filming. So yeah, just tell me, what have you been up to?
Yeah. We kicked off the year in Melbourne at the Wave Pool. So I've been running retreats at the Wave Pool for the last 18 months or so. And we did a big round there. We had 200 surfers in 3 weeks, which is a pretty hefty lift to get happening. So that was good. We did 4 days a week for, I think 4 days a week for 3 weeks. So that was good. And, you know, we achieved some really good things. We had some great students, which was good. And then we immediately went straight into a bunch of Sydney retreats, and then we went straight into our Twin Fin series, which has been consuming me for a few months now. And that's been the quest to find the best Twin Fin surfboard, basically. So we took 11 surfboards off the shelf from the best shapers in the world. Basically, I've surfed all of them over the past 3 months and whittled them down to the last four and now the last two, and we're going to announce a winner soon. So it's funny, like people, when they hear that, it sort of go, oh, you're living the dream life. It's amazing. But when I sum it up, you know, in the water or here in an interview or something, and I'm like, yeah, but because it's not just going for a surf. It's literally thinking about every shot. It's directing the camera operator. It's thinking about how I'm going to edit. Like I'll literally be thinking about how I'm going to edit as I'm surfing. And I'll come in and I'm, you know, obviously presenting on camera and directing shots again. But then I also come back and spend 2 days, 3 days, 4 days on an episode, editing it all together and wrapping it up, which is a pretty big mission. I'd love to get someone else to do the editing, but I'm not a control freak, but I have high standards when it comes to that stuff. And I just find unless you're paying exorbitant amounts of money for a really good editor who also has to be a really good surfer, that's the key thing, I'll have good surf knowledge, it's just better off doing it yourself. So yeah, these days I'm all about just quality over quantity, so we'll see how much we can keep up.
It's funny how people like see, you know, the dream life, the postcard life, and like, but they don't really see, it's like the iceberg scenario, right? You only see the tip, and the tip looks amazing, and then everything that comes with it, it's kind of like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the big asset that I could bring. I mean, yeah, I could surf at a competent level, but there are much better surfers than me, right? I could coach at a I would say now at quite an advanced level, but before I could coach at a competent level, but there were better coaches than me. There are better filmers and editors than me as well, but I could do those competently. But it was the combination of those skills and coupled with you know, my communication background that really, I think, enabled me to fast track and kind of stand out a little bit in what didn't used to be such a crowded space, but now is quite a crowded space.
Yeah, we talked about it like off the record before, how everybody kind of tries to tap into this like market of coaching, online coaching, surf retreats or surf experiences. But I actually, you mentioned something just before, and I want to tap into it, like your communication background, right? Like for me, knowing you, like it's interesting to see how somebody who used to write books and made documentaries like taps into this like surf coaching, surf, you know, surf experience type realm. So I wonder, how did this transition, or how did you actually get into it in the first place? Like why not just directing documentaries or writing books for the, you know, for the rest of your life?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's quite a long, drawn out narrative. But I started surfing when I was 10. That was the main thing. So there was this constant thread of surfing throughout my life from the age of 10 until the age of 30 now, 20 years. And up between 10 and 16, there was this push and pull between surfing and Aussie rules football. So I was a footballer, and that Aussie rules football would have been a career for me. Like that was a very viable option. So at the age of 16, I was sort of at that space where it was like, you know, I was representing the state, and then I was chatting with clubs and I was chatting with reps from clubs and talking about my future and stuff. But I'd never really, over the year or two before that, I just sort of lost my passion for it. Mainly really, I would say, due to who was playing. Like it was a very macho sort of, but also insecure sort of space that I didn't really want to be involved. I was never a partier or anything like that. And it was a boys club, you know? So I was never really into it.
Speaking of a boys club, right? I know we have some listeners from Australia, but we also have listeners from all over the world. So do you want to explain the boys club? Do you want to explain what Aussie rules football actually is? Because I don't think a lot of people outside of Australia know what Aussie rules football actually is.
I mean, it's probably the biggest ball sport here in Australia. I think it is. It would be the biggest ball sport here in Australia. It's bigger than soccer. It's bigger than rugby. And it's kind of, if you grew up in Adelaide, which is where I grew up, it's the quintessential example of success. If you become an AFL footballer, right, you are lauded as a hero, as a god in Adelaide and South Australia and Victoria, particularly in Western Australia. So you know, you can make a lot of money and you can do all that. I mean, nothing compared to what's made in American sports, but you can do well and succeed by doing it. So it's a very revered game. It's a rough game. But it also breeds, like, it was, I know they're introducing female leagues now, but it's still a sort of male-dominated sport, and the the culture behind it has been one that's very heavy with what happens before and after the game. So there's community there, which is great, but it's also a lot of community activities grounded in drinking and partying and smoking and you know, and that sort of boys club nature. That's what I mean by that. It's that sort of bravado, who can be the biggest man kind of thing. And I just never really, I was just never interested in that part of it. I actually quite liked playing the game, but I just never was interested in that part of it. So yeah, I sort of lost interest over time. And there was this pivotal moment where I was surfing and I was constantly deciding whether to surf in competitions or play football. And there was a moment when my coach at school, who was also a rep for a club, was sort of saying, hey, I've been chatting with this club and, you know, what do you want to do? Do you even want to do this? And I sort of looked at him and I was like, oh, not really. And that's when I just threw myself into surfing. And I was never really good enough in surfing to make a career of it. And I kind of knew that, but I just kind of aspired to anyway. Lo and behold. I got my license and then just spent the next 15 years from there just being obsessed with surfing. But at the same time, I also went through a lot of health stuff. So I had a heart condition when I was younger. I was told that that was incurable, and I went down a sort of journalistic research path into alternative health, which was very fringe at the time. This is 15 years ago. This is not when kombucha was available at every store you go to. This was very early. So I went down that route and developed a bit of a passion for that. And after becoming a journalist and working for a network TV station here in Australia, through my surfing work, funnily enough, I did that for 2 years and was able to do some health stories and stuff, and really got skilled up in essentially what I'm doing now, telling a story, producing, field producing, editing on the go, you know, directing, presenting as well at the same time, doing voiceovers, doing editing, and then, you know, bringing it all together. So I was really privy to that entire process while I was at the network TV station. So I learned really quickly some really valuable tools there. But then at the end of the two-year contract, I was sort of, again, I'd lost interest. I wanted to do my own thing. So I ended up going away and then pursuing that health thing all the while surfing, right? Surfing was always there, but I didn't think I could make a career from it. So I did that for almost, I probably did the health thing from the age of 20, I would say, 21 until 27. So it was a good 6 or 7 years. That I was actively working in that space. We made a couple of documentaries. I wrote some books to sort of accompany those documentaries. And the second documentary was so exhausting, was so such a behemoth, and it required so much of my resources because I funded both of these films because I had no patience to wait for funding. And I just said, I think that I'm done. That film was on longevity. And the big message that I got from that film after going and visiting the longest lived people in the world was to slow down and to live at a pace that's sustainable and do something you love and be surrounded by people who you love. So I just thought, hey, I'm going to just step way back here and just chill. And I ended up surfing a lot more. I had a surfing channel called How to Rip. It was an old channel of mine that, you know, it had sort of been a failed business plan, and then it just kind of took off on YouTube, but it was a half-hearted effort. And then I thought, okay, I think I'm going to give this surfing thing a go. And I started my own channel, and I think within 2 months I had maybe 10 or 12,000 subscribers. It was quite quick. And I was like, okay, I think this is something I want to do. And then it just step by step just took off, and I was getting approached for coaching every single day, messages and emails every single day while I was in Sydney. So I ended up coaching a huge cohort of surfers there for a couple of years, and then have sort of expanded on that and created, you know, the online, the surfers roadmap and the experiences, and yeah, and now the sort of the crossover into the more core surfing space as well with our board tests and a few other things that we're doing. So yeah, I'm treading quite broadly, but it's working.
Well, seems like it. I actually want to tap into, before we, you know, before we announce what we have to announce and before we want to, you know, loop our audience into what you and I have been working on over the last, it's been a while, a few months. I actually want to tap into the surface roadmap because I find this really interesting, because really what you're doing is like you target the everyday surfer, right? Like the intermediate, like you're really good in this like intermediate space, right? And I just want you to tell me a little bit more about what was the formula behind, or the idea behind, you know, creating programs or creating coaching experiences for the everyday surfer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, especially when it started, it was much more geared towards the beginner and intermediate surfer. But I think as I've gotten better as a coach, I've been able to progress a few surfers from that intermediate level to a more advanced level and starting to become more micro there, because there are some incredible coaches in the advanced space, right? That's not in question. There are some insanely good coaches in the advanced space, but I noticed there was this huge gap in the beginner and especially intermediate market. And what was interesting is that 85% of all surfers are in that intermediate market, but they weren't being served with a good go-to resource or or pathway or roadmap to progression, you know, and you can progress at any age, no matter where you are along that spectrum from beginner to advanced, no matter where you are, you can progress now. It doesn't matter about your age. And that was the weird thing is that, and still now, there's this misheld belief that your surfing stops progressing when you turn, you know, 25 or whatever, and you start going downhill from 30, you know, and it's not true. So I found that out by coaching people, and I had these incredible students initially early on who literally just challenged me with problems. Okay. And I could see, oh, the surfer's not doing this, but then why is that happening? And I would literally have to reverse engineer what was happening and then learn how to communicate a sort of more optimized approach to that problem or to that area of their surfing with training techniques to really iron it in. So this might look like, let's just call it the bottom turn. So there was a lot of generic lingo around bottom turn, and it was always get low and lean. You know, there was never any other talk really besides get low and lean on your bottom turn. And for me, it was like, okay, that's great. And it's true, but there's actually a little bit more going on. So how can we create these analogies and metaphors and more easily understood concepts for people who aren't deep in the surfing vernacular, right? People who had started 2 years ago are not going to know what someone means when they say get low and lean, or they might not be able to translate that into a movement. They might not be able to kinesthetically understand that. So that's when it all sort of kicked off. And I think, you know, our work with surf skates as well has been pretty pioneering in the space. I'm happy to say that, which has been really good. They've been a really helpful tool to incorporate into what we do, and then helping people get an intellectual understanding of a technique and then why certain attributes of a technique are beneficial to their surfing, the end result of their surfing, and then learn those things practically via the surf skate and in the surf. Has sort of been our approach. So yeah, it's not just, I think there was such a huge disparity between the quality of information that surfers needed and the quality of information that they were getting. There was such a big disparity there. And I thought, okay, well, I think the least I can do is improve the communication around these problems and techniques. And I think we've achieved that quite well, because some of the progressions that we see that we'll be sharing a lot more of soon and starting to document a lot more of soon are phenomenal. I mean, I've seen people progress from beginner to intermediate in one day, where they go from cutting across, standing there in a wave, doing nothing, to actually bottom turning and doing a cutback by the end of the day at the wave pool. So that process, and if you're familiar with surfing, you'll know this, that process would normally take 6 to 9 months, you know, if unless you're maybe 13 years old or 10 years old or whatever. It's not a quick process. Yeah, you're doing
it 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. So, that's been really cool. And I think the results speak for themselves, and that's why so many of our surfers come back every time they book again on the way out the door. So it's been really cool. And they're constantly, they are the ones who've fed this and built this curriculum for me. Literally just them approaching me with problems and me learning how to solve those problems and communicate solutions to them.
You know, there's this old saying of like, if you want to get better at surfing, you have to surf. Do you think that's that's still true?
I think it's true, absolutely, because surfing is there's a lot of positioning and paddling. You know, we should really, if we were titling the activity accurately, we would call it positioning and paddling as opposed to surfing, because the time we spend surfing is a very small portion of the entire experience. So that's the stuff that takes time to learn. It's very difficult, almost impossible, to teach someone to read the ocean and know what the ocean's going to do and position themselves accordingly for good waves and good entry into waves, which is really important. So that's where time in the ocean, I think, is incredibly key On wave performance, I think we're starting to challenge that conception now. I would love to run an experiment where I find someone who's good in the ocean already, so maybe a bodyboarder who's never surfed before or something like that, and then teach them from surf skating how to surf and then see how quick their progression is. I think that would be really interesting, because surf skating and surfing, the movements are almost exactly the same when you commit to good technique. So, yeah, it's true, and I appreciate it, and I did it, and I think everyone can benefit from it, and I mean surfing, but there are ways to hack it and fast-track it.
I guess if you learned like you and me, right, where I guess all we had was the ocean and all we had was like, you know, learning it the hard way with, you know, a lot of frustrations and a lot of like moments where you wanted to give up and, you know, the I guess the curve of progression was very, very, very slow. Right. And now with, you know, throwing wave pools into the mix, throwing surf skates into the mix, I guess that curve has sped up a lot. And I think that's also why when you look at the current landscape of surf coaching, right, like surf coaching programs and surf coaches as well, they're popping up left, right, and center.
Yeah. I mean, they're catering to a need, I guess. And you're right with this, with standardization or with control, rather, comes predictability and standardization. So that's what the wave pool and the concrete can provide. It's this consistent canvas to go, hey, I'm going to practice this over and over and over again. We never got that growing up. It was like, I'm going to try an air reverse today, but I'm probably only going to get one good section for it, and then I might not surf again for a few days. And the next surf might be just barrels and no air section. So I might not try that maneuver again for 2 weeks. By the time 2 weeks rolls around, your neuromusculature, your nervous system has forgot what that feels like, you know. So it's such an incredibly hard sport to improve in. But now we're literally living in a time where we'll look back in history and go, oh, that's when the general level of surfing, the worldwide level of surfing was elevated during the time of the wave pool revolution, which is what it is. And that's really what our sort of goal is with the surfers roadmap. I mean, it goes beyond just surfing better, right? Because surfing is a very spiritual practice. But more tangibly, it's elevating the level of surfing worldwide.
Right. Now I think like you just gave me an idea of a topic that I haven't written down. There was no anchor notes for it, but I always wonder, like, when it comes to coaching, like, what's the adaptability like? Because you have a lot of people who serve different crafts, right? Like back in the day, it was like a standard shorty. That was kind of like it. 90% of the people would surf that, and you would teach them or coach them how to ride a shortboard. But now today, you know, people ride single fins, longboards, twin fins. Like you even did a show about twin fins. So obviously there is a market for it. So I wonder, like, how does that work from a coaching perspective, right? Like, because people come to you and maybe you have 10 students and 5 of them, they serve quote unquote alternative crafts.
This episode is brought to you by BookThru, a piece of technology that will change the way you book your surf or snow trip forever. If you're like me, you get hyped on good surf or fresh powder. So trips are usually more of an impulse decision than long-term planning. I'm the type of person who likes to look at several options, compare them, and pull the trigger whenever I please. I don't like waiting and getting into an email exchange or lengthy phone calls to chase up information even less. This is where BookThru comes into play. BookThru makes it super easy to compare, customize, and configure your trip in real time. Everything from room types, pricing, and add-ons is available to you without you ever having to contact a travel agent. There's no lag time, no friction. You can book what you want, when you want it, from the comfort of your living room in just a few clicks. So head over to Luix.com and check out some of the properties in Portugal, Sri Lanka, and other selected destinations that already have integrated book-through capabilities. Our team behind the scenes is working hard to add more properties in the coming months to provide you with a smart, easy, and instant solution that revolutionizes the way you book your surf or snow trips.
Yeah, the fundamentals remain the same. I could probably start saying, like, if someone rides a longboard and they want to start doing longboarding, traditional longboarding, that's not like high performance longboarding. I don't even know. I'm out of my depth with the longboarding space. That's where I would draw the line and just say, look, you need to go and get coached by a professional longboarder or something like that, because I don't know how to tweedle up to the front of the board and hang my toes off. But someone coming on a performance mid-length, which is still might be a long board, like a 7 or 8 footer, can absolutely benefit from this same advice as someone who's riding a 5-10 twin fin. That's where it's basically, if you're trying to go from the bottom of the wave to the top of the wave with any sort of intensity and fine rotation and use rotation and compression simultaneously and with good rhythm and timing, which is what surfing is, then you're going to benefit from the same info. The subtleties of difference between, you know, a twin fin and a high-performance shortboard, that's something you would feel, and that's really something you would require you to change intensity as opposed to changing the actual technique, which is sort of a big misconception. It's been funny doing this twin fin series. I've had some comments on YouTube from people who say stuff like, that's not how you're meant to surf a twin fin, blah, 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 blah. Like, they're just those, there's this idea that you need to surf a twin fin by just sort of waving your arms in this cool style and just hanging them back behind you and looking down at your feet and doing all these things wrong, which is cool. I like how that looks, but it's not how I want to surf. And I don't see that as high performance surfing either. It's not. And a lot of people hide behind it. I've been watching some people out the front here surfing over the last few days on their alternative crafts who, you know, who just don't surf that well. And that doesn't matter at all. There's no like expectation or need to surf a certain way. But I don't know if they're the same people commenting. I doubt it. But the people commenting and doing this whole twin fin surfing thing that you see are often just hiding. They're hiding poor ability behind unique style, and that's totally fine. But yeah, it's not high performance surfing, and that's really what I'm trying to achieve in my own surfing, and it's what I'm trying to help other people achieve, because I just think it feels good to do big turns and monster through turns and get barreled and do airs. I think that's the best feeling in the world, not just sort of dancing along the wave, even though that looks really cool too.
Why do you think coaching is so important right now and not just for pros? Because as we said before, we elaborated on it before, there is a lot of coaches, there is a lot of experiences. Like, you can hop online and you probably find a million different surf coaching programs, online coaches, surf retreats, whatever you want, right? So why do you think it has become so important?
I mean, I would say it's not become more important than it was before. It's just become more normal to be coached. Surfing, I would say, even 5 years ago, like that shorter time frame, you would suggest to the everyday surfer who's surfed for 10, 15 years, like, hey, you might benefit from some coaching. They'd tell you to piss off, you know. They'd be like, what do I need coaching for, you kook? You know, I'm not getting coaching. So it was almost like an insulting sort of concept that anyone would need coaching or anyone could progress. But that mindset's changed, I think, with proof of concept, so people actually improving no matter what their age. I've coached 60-year-olds before who have improved in one or two sessions. where was I going with that? Yes, so I think it's become a lot more a part of the conversation, hence the increase in popularity. I know a lot of the pro coaches, right? So I've worked with them on my own surfing, which has been really helpful. But the stuff they're doing with the pros, the actual, you know, professional surfers on tour and competitions and stuff, rarely has to do with technique. And if it is to do with technique, it's very minor tweaks to their technique. So you see these diminishing returns as you become a more advanced surfer. Your progression is obviously a lot smaller and slower because there's not a lot of room to move up there. But then for the everyday surfer, when you correct their bottom turn, for example, and which sets them up for good maneuvers, then you start to see some exponential growth really quickly, no matter where that surfer, no matter how long that surfer surfed before, you know. So I think that's why it's becoming so popular. But I would also say that there are some risks there because there's some I would say suboptimal information out there. Yes.
So we'll leave it at that.
Well, okay, no, I think this is important is who are you getting your information from? Do they surf well? Or do they at least surf better than you or at a level where you want to go? Because chances are if they're an intermediate and you're a beginner, then they can provide value to you to get you a little bit higher because they're probably more experienced and they've got some more awareness. Now, if you're an intermediate surfer and you're being coached by an intermediate or a late beginner, which is often the case in the YouTube space, you may not benefit very much from that information because there's a lot of there's experience lacking there. And I'm not just talking about intellectual experience because you could learn theoretically a surfing curriculum, which I'm an advocate of. But you need to couple that with a kinesthetic or a feeling understanding of how that intellectual idea is sort of manifested in the body and in reality. You need to be able to feel it in order to coach it. And you need to be able to identify it and see it really quickly because a lot of people will come to me and then it's, you know, my friend, a lot of my students become my friends. So one of the guys who I've coached, Dr. Alex, he came down to the wave pool and he's had coaching with all the coaches up here in northern New South Wales, which is kind of the mecca for surfing here in Australia, one of the meccas. Especially for surf coaches, and he could never really improve. He said he plateaued for a good, you know, 7, 8, 10 years or something like that. And on his back end, there was just this one cue within 3 minutes. He caught two waves, and I was like, yep, I'm going to write that down. And it was literally just him flipping his palm and finding more of a low to high movement with that leading arm on his back end that just totally revolutionized his back end surfing. And he was like, literally in 10 seconds, you've just changed my surfing with just that cue. So, and that doesn't make me special or anything, but it makes me good at sort of identifying and very quick to identify what's holding a surfer back because I can feel what's happening. Whereas I think someone who's maybe not as experienced or surfing at a level that's not as high as I am might not be able to feel that and see it as quickly. And then the key is communicate it as well.
Well, speaking of communicate it and communications, let's dive into you as a product because I already talked about it in the very beginning of the podcast that you and I have been, or I should say Luix and you and I in the mix, we have been working on this experience for people, right? That kind of takes them out of the wave pool and kind of drops them into a, well, we can say now, dreamy location somewhere in the Indian Ocean to progress pretty much in 7 days, right? So do you want to reveal what's in store for them or what we have planned for them?
I'm looking forward to it. It's my first overseas retreat. So we're sort of calling it our premium Maldives experience because it's at a 5-star resort, which I'm also looking forward to. No, I think it's those total immersion experiences that have such a big impact on your surfing, right? And that's why on a, I guess a less macro level, people come into the wave pool for a day with me. We do 4 sessions in a day. It's a total immersion experience, right? Nothing else is on your mind. You're here to surf and you're going to catch a ton of waves. So I attribute a lot of my big steps forward. Surfing is like that, right? It's you often don't move forward in steady, predictable increments. You kind of plateau a little bit and then you go, whoa, big jump forward. And then you plateau again. That's generally how surfing has worked, especially ocean-based surfing. So for me, when I grew up, as I was growing up, those big leaps forward often came after surf trips. So going to idyllic locations, definitely not 5-star resorts, but going out into the desert, for example, where I'm from in South Australia, going on those sorts of trips and working on my back end surfing, or working on tubes and heavy waves and all those sorts of things. That's when my surfing really jumped up. So that's, I think, what I'm most excited about, because we get the opportunity to do that in the ocean with real powerful waves. And when I say that, I don't mean really advanced heavy waves. I mean real, powerful waves. So waves with power, right? And that's really important too. So I think, it's a big opportunity for me as well to really get involved and craft, not hold someone's hand, but guide them over a longer period than just a day, and with a small group too, along that narrative, and just try and take them as far as possible along that roadmap from wherever they are closer to advanced surfing. Who knows? Maybe we'll even take people beyond advanced surfing. No, but I think it's going to be really fun.
That's the elevator pitch for the retreat.
I mean, it is, but it's like, it's not something I generally don't oversell all my experiences, mm-hmm. because I think that the most important thing there is that the underlying product, it's the quality of coaching. That's the most important thing. When you film surfers, so we'll have everything filmed, obviously, while we're there. We've got a professional filmer, and they're going to film everyone's waves, which is really important, and then we take those back. And at the end of the day, this is where people get their big bang for their buck, right? At the end of the day, we sit down as a group and we put up on screen, you can imagine a wide screen, we split it up, we have a sort of optimal technique over to the right side of screen, and we have the surfer performing there the same technique over to the left, and we point out the differences and we point out ways to correct that technique. So we do that, you know, every day after we go surfing twice a day in you know, empty, beautiful waves. That's where people start to get those big aha moments, right? And a lot of the people are already working with me, but who are coming, but they'll also be able to sort of sink into those feelings a little bit, because, you know, they come to the wave pool for a day, they jump forward, they have a good progression forward, but then they go back to work and they go back and they have to look after the kids and all that sort of stuff. So just taking a little bit of extra time to think about, to implement, to catch a bunch of waves around, their progression is a huge asset. And again, when you couple that with, I think, good advice, the opportunities are kind of wide open.
So essentially what's going to happen, guys, is Kale throws this premium wildlife surf experience at Ayata Resort in September. I should have done my homework because I completely forgot the dates, but it's September 21st.
Second half of December.
December.
No, sorry. Second half
September,
of
September, right?
September. Yeah. I mean,
exactly.
But
we will drop the dates and everything you need to know into the show notes. So
17th
you will have,
till the 24th.
There we go. 17th. Until the 24th of September.
Yeah.
You can join Kale for 7 days. 6 days will be coaching, right? Twice a day. Filmed by a professional filmer. So you guys can analyze it later on and obviously work on technique and, you know, what needs to be improved. And I think I should point out that we already did a soft launch and we already have a lot of traction, and there's only going to be 8 spots. So, you know, if you want to get amongst it, you have to do it pretty soon, because these spots, they seem to run off the shelf like hot cookies. So yeah.
Yeah. And with that video analysis, and yes, we are half booked already. With that video analysis, they'll get like a sort of summary of the trip as well to take home and work on for the next, you know, few months of their surfing. So they'll get a collage of all their surfing clips and all their good waves brought to the front and analyzed quite in detail with a good sort of homework program. So when we say it's a premium Maldives experience, we mean it is a premium experience. To do that with eight people is pretty good.
Can you actually talk through what people can expect? You know, like what's included, what's going to happen, how will it differ from, you know, your surface roadmap experiences at the wave pool? Also, you know, do they have access to online resources, things like that?
Yeah, so it's good. They're going to go through the surfers roadmap online. So they're going to get all the courses on there for a while before the retreat. We're going to catch up over a call, have a look at what they're doing, and we're going to create some goals for the surfer. So that's really important to work out where the surfer's at and what they're trying to achieve from the trip, because I can come into it and say, I want you to be doing like huge laybacks or big top turns there. But if they're just interested in going, hey, I just want to cruise and go as fast as I can, then I've got to obviously adhere to that and try and work with that direction that they want to go. So we're going to catch up before the retreat and sort that out and basically plug them into the Surfers Roadmap curriculum, which will first be a digital experience in the lead up to the Maldives, and then that becomes a tangible in-person real world experience with me in the Maldives. And that's literally, it's every single day. So it's the same thing every single day. Where are the best waves going to be? We're going to decide that the day before. Okay, we're going to book the boat in for this and that, and we're going to shoot off there, and we're going to spend as much time as possible surfing. And then maybe, who knows, maybe fishing on the way back and getting some good food or whatever. But most of the time we're going to be surfing, and we're going to capture all that. And hopefully, definitely, we will start to chip away at the surfer's progression. So looking at a very detailed approach, an individualized approach to getting them to where they want to be as a surfer. It's not rocket science, but it's a careful process. I'm really careful about coaching these days. I think it needs to be considered very heavily. The advice you give, the cues you give, the communication style per surfer needs to change. Funnily enough, some people need more involvement. You know, they want you out there in the lineup with them, which I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be surfing with people, taking all the waves. No, I'm kidding. but I'll be out in the lineup with everyone and helping them out throughout the session as well. So we get this sort of constant feedback and constant progression cycle throughout the whole experience. And I haven't been to Ayata before. Have you been there? Can you tell me, is it good?
I've been a couple of times. Yeah. It's what I said before. My teaser was dreamy, and it is dreamy because it's obviously the Maldives are very remote, but Ayata is really remote. Like there's not much around, you know, and you kind of arrive at this, you know, beautiful resort, five-star resort, you know, on a private island, with, I think there's like four or five waves within like a 10-minute, you know, boat ride. So it is a surf resort. Like it is paradise. And if, you know, if you want to surf your brains out and go back to the resort and just chill, that's exactly what you can do. Like it has a little bit of everything, right? So for me, I've been to the Maldives three times. I've been to many, many resorts, and Ayata is always one of the standouts, for sure.
What do you think of the time of year that we're going? Because that was quite a calculated decision, that one.
Right. So because it's, you know, you're going to the south, right? And if you look at a map, there's really nothing that blocks swell you know, hitting the southern atolls. So waves are always going to be a little bit bigger than, let's say, in, you know, the north or central atolls. And that's kind of like what you want, because that time of the year, waves are generally speaking, a little bit smaller. Like, it's just going out of the prime season, which means, you know, a lot of surfers go home. They don't have vacation in anymore. It's definitely less crowded because, yeah, the prime season is over. But for the southern atoll, it doesn't really matter too much because it's like a wave pool. Like, it just creates consistent swells that are perfect for intermediates. You know, they're not too small, not too big. The winds are going to be much, much better as well, because again, you know, it goes into this like more quiet season. So we talked a lot about, you know, when we should put on this retreat, right? A lot of thought has gone into the actual time frame of it, so people can get, you know, the best experience of both worlds, kind of thing. They can on land, but also in the water.
Yeah, I think that was a good note, is we've sort of crafted this for the intermediate surfer, because that's the majority of the surfing population. And what do we mean by intermediate surfer? It's someone who is catching waves independently of a variety of sizes, say up to, you know, 3 foot is a pretty, and I mean 3 foot Australian, Hawaiian, so I don't know what that is, right, in American. People always tell me off.
Sort of like shoulder to head high, right? Is that perfect, kind of what we're, yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect. So if someone can catch waves independently doing that, it almost doesn't matter what they're doing on the face of the wave, as long as they can catch those waves confidently, comfortably on their own. So that's what we would consider intermediate level at this time.
Yeah.
In this circumstance.
And the beauty is also like what I said before, right? There is a lot of waves around Ayata. You know, there's like 3 or 4 waves like within like a 10-minute boat ride. Then you have like 2 or 3 more waves that are a little bit heavier, you know, within like a 40, 35, well, yeah, 35, 40-minute speedboat ride. So you have variety and you have, you know, anything. You have A-frames, you have lefts, you have rights, you have heavy, real heavy barreling waves. You have, you know, sort of like more rippable trestles type waves. So it's basically like you can pick and choose and really, you know, hone your craft and hone in on like what you want to improve on, right? Whether that's your back end, whether that's barrel riding, whether that's just like your flow and or speed. So I think people, these 8 lucky, you know, ladies and gentlemen that actually are going to be part of it, they're going to go home stoked, because all they do, again, you know, in the Maldives, there's not much distraction. You know, there is water, there's a resort, there's some islands, and that's pretty much it. So by default, you're going to be spending a lot of time in the water.
Yeah, and time in the water with other good surfers is a really good recipe for just naturally improving. Our focus point mainly for the first few days, at least, is going to be those rippable waves, you know, the trestle style waves, so that we can assess where everyone's at, that, you know, you want to sort of abide by that process regardless. And then within the retreat, create a bit of an arc, right, that where we start to challenge people only slightly. We don't want to push them too far out of their comfort zone into, you know, maybe more advanced waves. If everyone's comfortable. So that I'm excited about as well.
So we've been talking about this retreat, elusive retreat that we haven't really announced before and people didn't really know about for the last 15 minutes, but now we got to tell them like how they can actually be part of it.
I don't even know. Are you going to put notes in there?
What? That was kind of like my kind of pitch to you to like tell them, but that's fine. All right. So I will definitely put all the information into the show notes. Or you can just get in touch with us directly. You can DM Kale on his Instagram. You can DM me on my Instagram. You can DM Luix. You know, all the messages, all the platforms you want, we will get you a message and we will make sure you're going to be part of, you know, this amazing first time retreat in the Maldives.
You're condemning me to an influx of messages.
I was trying to get you to tell people what they should do, but you didn't. So I just, I just took the lead on this one.
You're a good host, Sonny. People appreciate it. I hope you include all this in the podcast.
I will, for sure. There's nothing, unlike you, I really suck at editing. So, you know, by default, there's not much I can edit. So yeah, everything, all the raw information will be there for sure. All the B-rolls and everything.
I look forward to it. I can't wait to get this one done. It's going to be fantastic.
What's next? What's next for you? What's next for the Surface Roadmap? What's next for, you know, your YouTube subscribers, your fans, are you writing a book? Are you doing more filming for, you know, like documentaries on what was it? The gut health or whatever it was?
Yeah.
Or just surf?
I think it's all going to be around surfing. At least for now. I don't really, like, we've got big goals for the Surfers Roadmap. Eventually we will create a space, like a go-to space where people can come and progress their surfing. What that looks like remains to be seen, because we're probably 5 years away from wave pool technology being a lot more affordable and being able to very clearly assess and pick the best one too. So I'm sort of waiting in that space, and then we'll hopefully get some land and create our own, you know, the Surfers Roadmap Academy. But yeah, that's the next step on a macro scale. On a micro scale, I don't know. We'll just see what happens. I think I'm going to take a little bit of time off now. I've got to work on the Advanced Surfers Roadmap. I've been trying to work on that for ages. There's a few other projects I've got to work on that are more of a slow burn and require me to be off, you know, off screen in the background, which is fine. But regardless of what I'm doing, I'm going to be surfing every day.
That's the life. Thank you so much for, you know, jumping on this podcast. I know you have to go. You have, I think, another call or coaching class.
All sorts of stuff happening.
Exactly. So I let you go now. I just wanted to tell people again, you know, if you want to be part of this very first Maldives premium experience, get in touch with either me, Luix, or Kale.
Ew.
Cheers, guys. And that, my friends, wraps up another episode of Luix FM, the only podcast centered around surf, snow, and travel, featuring unbelievable stories, people, and trips. If you want to hear more from us, make sure to subscribe to Luix FM on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you like what we have to say, make sure to leave a review, and if not, always feel free to reach out and let us know. Also, don't forget to head over to Facebook or Instagram and give us a follow at Luix Travel, or just check in with us over at luix.com for more stories and content of the greatest lifestyle in the world. I'm your host, Sonny Fassler. Until next time.